All right, we're rocking and rolling on another episode of That's
So Cincinnati.
My friend, Sherry Coolidge, a year older or a year younger. She's 29. She just came out, had a birthday. Happy birthday, Sherry.
Thank you, Jason.
Sherry Coolidge, my sidekick, co-host, and of course, our executive producer, Silent Phil. Fun show today. Fun episode. I don't know why we say, is it show? Phil, can we say show? We can. He nods his head yes. We can say show. We can say episode.
There was a little debate on Twitter this week about whether, like, are we, like, breaking news kind of show? Are we a talk show? And I was thinking about it, and I think we're all of it kind of rolled into one.
Yeah. I think this is a different forum. We've talked about that, Sherry. I think the response to our podcast has been great, and I think we already addressed that. And so, yeah, let's get right to it. Today's special guest is U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, the Democrat from Ohio. Looking forward to having him in. He's fresh off of a Meet the Press interview on Sunday, and we're going to follow up on some questions with that. We're going to talk to him about some things that he did here in Cincinnati this week. And what's going on in Washington? Nothing, I guess. All right.
Nothing. I don't know. Is there some sort of election? It's nice of him to stop by. He does come down here. I mean, obviously Cincinnati, he has an office here and this is part of his constituency, even though this is a big state. He lives all the way north. Yes. So it's a long drive, but he's here today but he's been on just, you know, every show because he's technically on a book tour too, on top of everything else. He wrote a book, Desk 88, Eight Progressive Senators Who Changed America. And it like highlights George McGovern and Robert F. Kennedy, but this is his desk.
Yeah. And in fairness, we've also reached out to Senator Rob Portman and I've tried to get him on. We tried to get him on a couple weeks ago. It didn't work out, but the invitation is there and we're hoping to get him on as well. So we're always trying to balance this out. When we have a chairman or chairwoman from one party, we're trying to get someone from the other side. And so this is a nonpartisan forum. This is a little bit of a break even from a lot of the crazy day-to-day politics. We want to show a little bit of the human side of the folks that you've elected. And so this is a forum where we can do that at. So that's part of when people are saying, is this a talk show? Is this journalism? It's a mixture of both.
Our goal is to make, you know, have this be newsworthy and make news. It's not all the time that we get to sit down with people like this. A lot of times we just call them and it's like, okay, here's the topic of the second. We're writing a story about it.
Yep.
And you have 10 minutes with somebody and you ask the most pointed questions you can, which you can be tougher in that sort of situation than we've seen like in these more long ranging conversations. Like sometimes people are like, you know, but you didn't like go really hard on this one thing. This is a different format, but we do try and break news in this format too. And really just to let you know the human side that we get to talk to all the time.
Yes. So I'm looking forward to having Senator Brown in. But first, before we jump to Senator Brown, let's talk about what everybody's already been talking about and what we've been talking about since the start of, 2019, even heck, 2018, maybe even going back to 2016, and that's the 2020 election. We all know, obviously, what's at the top of the ticket, but more so, wow, Sherry, the 2020 election in Hamilton County is shaping up to be, like, I mean, we're looking at some epic races here.
No, I agree. And have you gotten off your phone? I don't know. Like, you've been on your phone, like, even more than normal, which is a lot.
I mean, it's already people are in 2020 mode. And you look, you know, top to bottom from the prosecutor's race all the way down to the treasurer's race. You're looking at some, you know, sheriff's race. I mean, they're in commissioners, two commissioner seats.
You know,
there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of high profile candidates and incumbents who are going to go to battle here.
You know, really, this is how the system is supposed to work. You know, when I started covering the commission in 2010, you saw a lot of deals being cut. Like, we were on the heels of it and kind of in the midst of it. If you don't run somebody against the Democrats won't run somebody against the Republicans. And we saw some of these just uncontested races. And that's over. It's a free-for-all now. You know, look, we saw Stephanie Dumas run, and she is a citizen. She's just from out in the county, Forest Park, Lincoln Heights. And she's like, I want to be a commissioner. And that's what the system is set up to be, that anybody can run and win and, you know, really kind of shape the direction we're going in. And not only are these a lot of candidates, right? They're going to be deciding huge issues. We're in the midst of like just absolutely a changing time in our city and our county.
And let's kind of in a popcorn form, we have plenty of time to discuss a lot of these races. We're going to be covering thoroughly with Sherry's coverage, with Scott Wortman, with our two Statehouse folks, Jesse Balmer, Jackie Borchert. I'm sure there'll be other. I'll be writing columns and mixing in, breaking some news here and there, here on the podcast as well. But let's sort of do a popcorn look at each one of these.
Okay.
Sherry, the 2020 Hamilton County Prosecutor's race.
Well,
tell us a little bit about that.
Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters has been the prosecutor just for a very long time, since 2004, when he was a write-in candidate coming back from being the treasurer, but he was before here in the county, and he's a juggernaut, and there are two people now looking to contest him, so there's going to be actually a Democratic primary between Gabe Davis and Fanon Rucker, and this is going to be a fight, I think.
Yeah.
And we're going to hear a lot of different kind of things about what that office can do and be, and what Joe has done here and statewide for the criminal justice system. I think it's going to be a big airing of that.
I'll tell you, I think that's one, you know, I do think ultimately primaries are good for the voters. But what's best for the party in trying to beat and entrench the longest, if you put both of his terms together, Joe is the longest tenured prosecutor in the history of Hamilton County. It's going to take every bit of resource that you have, to beat him. And so a primary in the case of this is maybe not the best situation, because you have to divert resources to win that. And let's be honest, there are no fundraising limits in the county race. And Joe Dieters is a prolific fundraiser. And what do you say?
$2 million.
It's going to take $2 million. I haven't looked. I asked him this a couple weeks ago. He didn't have the number off the top of his head, but we know he said on our show a couple months ago, he'd already raised $600,000. So I bet he's probably approaching $1 million now. I know he's had a bunch of fundraisers since. He actually officially kicks off his campaign this Saturday, November 16th? Or is it Saturday? Or
it's the 15th of Saturday. 15th,
or it's sometime this week. So you got that race. Jumping over to, you got two commissioner seats open. How are those shaping up?
Well, that's kind of, you know, that, of course, we've talked about this one a lot before on the podcast. It's, you know, because Todd Portune is leaving early. We're getting an early glimpse of what this race is going to look like, because people are really, you know, starting to be like, I want a seat here. Like, that has kind of sped up the process, even though it is almost 2020. That has been on fast forward, because whoever is going to move into Todd Portune's seat when he retires, which he said before the end of the year, is really going to have a good shot at being a commissioner. It's made people think, you know, even ahead of this deadline to run, which is in later December, it's made people be like, well, I'm really going to do this, and I'm going to be all in. And like, everybody's kind of like, who's going to support who?
Yep.
And so, I mean, I think you have the inside line on who's kind of in line for these seats.
So for the Todd Portune seat, this is actually, just learned this before we jumped in the recording booth here. Former state senator Eric Kearney is no longer, he has pulled his name out. He pulled his name out on Sunday night. That was according to Todd Portune, who Todd Portune and Denise Driehaus both were behind to get the appointment, which the appointment will be made by the Democratic Party. And so Eric Kearney is out of the running for that.
Although, make no mistake, this is going to be Todd Portune's legacy.
Yes.
And he has a say in this.
Absolutely.
This is not him saying, oh, well, I feel like this person would be good, and the party turns around and does something else. This is Todd's legacy, and people are going to honor this.
And you know, it's funny. I just was on the phone with Todd talking about that, and how important that is to him, and how important it is for him to you know, now thoroughly vet other candidates. And he wanted to make it clear that Alicia Reese is someone that he is also going to consider, as he now kind of goes back to what he said, the drawing board, for someone that he's going to recommend for the appointment. And I would think that the party is going to go along with the recommendation that he makes, because Denise is going to be supportive of that as well. You have I have Alicia Reese, who's already filed and cleared and ready to go on the ballot. John Cranley is behind her. I think one of the storylines that we're potentially looking
behind
at here.
Behind her run, not to run for commission. He's supporting her run for commission.
Yeah.
They were on council together. And,
yes.
You know, I think they share a lot of the same views.
And he's throwing a fundraiser for her. And so Cranley is all in for Alicia Reese. You know, I think a storyline we need to keep tabs on is, are we heading toward more city, county, mayor, Cranley, Denise Driehaus, butting heads, and this sort of has the makings of that. I don't want to project too much, but you can sort of see this maybe coming down the pike. Any thoughts on that?
Well, the idea that Alicia is, I mean, technically right now she's filed to run against Denise. I feel
No, she's technically filed. She's run for Todd's seat.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. See, I mean, it is complicated. You guys got to follow along like pretty closely. You have another name too, right?
Wayne Coates is another name. He's a former county recorder, got beat in 2016 by a former judge, Norbert Nadel. He has not filed, but he's pulled petitions to potentially run for commissioner. I think that's another interesting thing. So if he jumped in, see, he and Stephanie Dumas are from Forest Park. He helped Stephanie in her election last year. So is it now, will she turn around and will that be kind of her quote unquote candidate in this race as well? So you could potentially be looking at the two incumbent commissioners having their own choices. And then the mayor Cranley also sort of having his, not that he really has much of a say in it.
No, but let's not pretend otherwise.
Right.
The mayor, I think we both know, is one of the most powerful forces in this county as the mayor of the largest city. It just,
yes,
it is, and it's part of his personality too, I think. But when he speaks, people listen.
Another, and on the Republican side, we've talked about Andy Black, a newcomer to the scene, countywide scene, a former Marymount Village councilman, impressing a lot of people in his party, raising a lot of money. I've said this before that if this were 10 years ago in this county, I think we would all be sitting here saying he's kind of the next great thing in Hamilton County politics, kind of out of central casting. The other intriguing storyline here for, I think people need to keep tabs on, is who will the Republicans, have anyone to run against Denise Driehaus? There's a lot there that they at least are talking about that they think that they can use against her, with her keeping the museum tax or the sales tax implemented, the banks issue with the Bengals deal. But so far, no one has stepped up, and there have been no real big names that I've heard of. Anyone who's really all in and serious about doing this. You continue to hear Christopher Smitherman. I know there are people asking him about it. I know there are people asking Amy Murray about it.
That's just part of it, right? Like, all the speculation and like people asking them and them being, I don't know. And I mean,
right,
I don't have definitive no's on these things. And what we have is Christopher Smitherman's running for mayor. And Amy really hasn't said what she's going to do next. But this is how the game goes.
But time is ticking. A month out from the filing deadline for the 2020 commissioner's race. Let's switch gears. The Hamilton County Sheriff's race. Another intriguing, another Democratic primary.
So Charmaine McGuffey is primarying Sheriff Jim Neal. I thought we would hear a lot more about this. This is a known fact now for several months, I feel like. And you've just heard very little, really, from both campaigns. The sheriff's being the sheriff. Charmaine is, I know, out raising money, but she hasn't really made issues out of anything. I mean, there hasn't been, like, news breaking on this primary race, but maybe they're just waiting. I thought that there would be a lot more, though.
And we're closing in on just a little over 4 months away from that election. So
it's hard to believe.
That one's now going to be kicking. I would think certainly at, maybe right after the holidays, that is going to be kicking into high gear, as is the prosecutor's race, the primary. On the Republican side in that race, it's pretty widely known. It hasn't been officially announced yet, but longtime Cincinnati Police Lieutenant Bruce Hoffbauer, West Side guy, Elder grad, shocking, is going to is expected to run as the Republican representative in the sheriff's race. Highly, highly respected in law enforcement circles. I've had people tell me he reminds them a lot of Jim Neal when Jim Neal came onto the scene. Just more so from having that appeal to the West Side and being able to have crossover appeal and being widely respected in the law enforcement community and really on the political scene, a newer name. Bruce Hoffbauer's dad was a longtime top deputy to Cy Leese's sheriff's department. Yeah. And so I think what's happening on that side is they're somehow, some way hoping that Charmaine McGuffey defeats Jim Neal, and that the Republicans think that it'll be an easier. Well, none of it's going to be easy, but that she will be easier to beat than Jim Neal will be easier to beat.
I mean, if you ask me to make a prediction in that race right now, I'm not going to do it. Like, yeah. I don't know. I have to wait and see how things really. I mean, when it has barely started, I want to see how things shake out.
As Scoop Wortman, which by the way also had a birthday. It's a big birthday week for the team, Inquirer political team. Otherwise known internally as Team Carl.
So you know what happens when we have birthdays here? This is the best. So Mark Wirt, the investigative editor, he celebrates everybody's birthdays.
The doctor.
And he brought in a pie for Scott's birthday, and the pie was on Scott's desk. And as you know, I go in my waves of trying to eat healthy. I'm in that period at the moment. And he brought in like the most amazing apples, just big and red.
Oh, is that where those came
fall.
From?
Yes. I keep creeping onto Jason's desk. But anyway,
and then we
send out messages. And let's just say Scott was a whole lot more popular than me. That pie was gone in a second, and not one person has stopped by to get an apple, which is fine because then I'll eat them for the next 2 weeks.
It was funny because Scott and I were in here, I don't know, what was that, last Friday night? We were hanging around for something, and somehow I don't remember what we were on the topic on, but Scott just says, "I'm done making predictions. Done." And I said, "I'm right there with you, buddy." So
I don't believe either one of you, but okay.
I'm certainly done making them publicly, I think.
No.
At least for now. But that is one where I can't make. I mean, all these, or certainly the prosecutor's race is a hard one to predict. At least the general election, I think, is going to be super hard to predict. The sheriff's primary.
What you know? What
I don't
about,
want to predict
wait,
that
we miss treasurer because you know.
Well, we're coming up to that. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Coming up to treasurer. I mean, Sherry, we're talking about in a year where the president, congressional races, the prosecutor, the commissioners, even in this crazy 2020 year. Even the county treasurer's race is really intriguing. You've got Charlie Winburn looking to be the Republican candidate against Jill Schiller, who ran for Congress last year against Brad Winstrup.
Started to make a name for herself.
Impressed a lot of people. And I'll tell you, lost that race overall, but crushed Brad Winstrup in the Hamilton County portion of the district by more than 10 points. Have you ever seen a... There's never, and certainly, you know, by the way, why we're having a big treasurer's race, so to speak, is that Rob Gehring, the long 27 years as the treasurer, is retiring from that, and he's going to run for a common pleas judge seat in 2020.
And, you know, he's been the treasurer, right? And, like, it's such a low-key job. I'll tell you what, the key to the treasurer's race, and I think this is where when they talk about what they're going to do, is really the treasurer doesn't have, like, a lot of power. They do your tax bills. They don't have a lot of extra money. They send out the tax bills. They have a staff that handles it. It's the thing that comes into this race is customer service.
Yep.
Because when you have a problem with your tax bill, and people do, they call and they're looking for customer service. And I think you're going to see that's where the conversation goes for treasurer, because you're like, wonky. What does a treasurer do? They process the tax bills. But it is about customer service and helping people with that, and I think that's where that race would head.
And tax dollars are a part of that, and so it is an important race. That's how I see it. Let's put a capper on this for now. I just want to do some snippets, some thumbnails, so to speak, of the of 2020. We got other things. There's more things to talk about. We got some state rep races around here that I think are going to be a big deal. But we'll talk about those. I think we got a little bit more time. We'll talk about those in an upcoming episode. Let's shift gears and let's jump to and bring in Senator Sherrod Brown. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Welcome in Senator Sherrod Brown. Senator, thanks for coming in. It's great to have you here.
Look forward to talking to both of you. Thanks, Sherry, and thanks, Jason.
It's always good to see you in Cincinnati. What were you in town today for?
A couple things. I joined Senator Portman in Mayor Cranley working on NIOSH on the relocation of National Institutes of Occupational Safety and Health. And what really intrigues me about NIOSH is, and I didn't grow up in Cincinnati. I don't live here. I live in the other end of the state. And I've always been a bit, not concerned, but surprised at how this community doesn't quite appreciate the fact that they have this amazing facility. NIOSH is the only one of its kind, not just in the country, but it really is the only one of its kind in the world. All of its reason for being is to make sure workers have safe workplaces, whether it's occupational injury research, disease research, research about chemical exposure. And there's nothing like it in the world. Mm-hmm. And we got back in 2015, my staff got some money, the process begun to consolidate it from multiple locations into one. It's going to be at the UC camp near on the edge of the UC campus. UC and Cincinnati Children's, one of the great hospitals in the country, are working together on this, and it will be even more of a jewel for our country, for Cincinnati to be sure, but for our country. And increasingly people locally are seeing not taking it for granted.
How many jobs is that?
500, I believe. The jobs are recent graduates from UC that majored in chemistry, PhDs from Ohio State and from people coming from, I mean, just in, they're good paying jobs. I would assume there's a lot of spinoff from jobs like this. You will see professors from UC or Cincinnati State or Xavier also on staff there. I mean, you'll see a lot of cross-fertilization like this. So and having it here brings a lot of people in to see it and a lot of companies' interests and all that.
It really – I mean, the innovation corridor is going to be one of – Mayor John Cranley's hallmarks of his administration, like putting this all together. And it's just something that's kind of like low key and on the down low. And they tout it a lot in City Hall. And I think people don't really understand, but it really is about these kind of jobs and attracting young people to our city. And I just think that the fruits of that kind of things are going to bear out later, like after his term ends. And we go down the road. It's just at the very beginnings of it.
I mean, I think it's almost any place you live, people don't appreciate sort of what you have. In Cleveland, they don't appreciate the fact they have one of 10 NASA facilities in the country. You know, I don't know that people in Cleveland appreciate the Great Lake as much as they should, Lake Erie. But I think the innovation corridor here is something that people are taking more and more mind of. People are more and more interested and see what that does to this community in terms of the synergism and the wealth it brings and the life it brings. And, you know, more and more, I mean, people that grow up in places like Jason does, grew up in, or where you do, Sherry, they tend to move to bigger cities.
And Gallipolis for Jason. I can pronounce it now, right, Jason?
Gallipolis.
Yeah,
she's close. She says it with a Youngstown accent, but she'll get there.
Yeah, it's taken a while.
But you know, they typically, so often they're gravitating to big cities, and that's, I wish that weren't always the case. I grew up in Mansfield, and you know, people often leave for job opportunities, leave for school, don't come back except to bring back grandparents to see grandchildren, which Sherry is not quite done as well as she should in getting her child to see her parents in Youngstown. But anyway, but I mean, in these cities, places like Cincinnati really are a real magnet for people all over this region.
I think I've asked you this before, but Cincinnati in your long political career, which began in the early 80s, did you ever think back then that you would be winning Cincinnati and be winning Hamilton County and be winning it the way you're winning it now?
Probably not, but I also thought I would do better in smaller city rural areas. I mean, the way that politics, the changed states changed, Cincinnati and Columbus were Republican counties.
Yep.
But places like Steubenville and Portsmouth and Chillicothe and Springfield were Democratic, and those smaller cities are moving more and more Republican in the big metro areas where the education levels are the highest, the income's the highest, the speed of life is greater in those cities, and that's the way the city, and it's politically, it's a challenge for a Democrat in this state, to be sure. But more than that, we've got to figure out in this state how we help to make Springfield and Middletown and Mansfield and Lima and places, even Batavia and Gallipolis and Portsmouth, we've got to figure out how to make them more attractive so young people stay there. Because when young people leave a community in fairly high numbers, especially young people that are lucky enough to get an education at Cincinnati State or Xavier or UC or wherever, you end up those other communities suffer. I mean, the opioid addiction is a problem in greater Cincinnati, but it's more of a problem where you grew up and mm-hmm. where I grew up and sort of where Sherry grew up too. Yeah.
Is it – I want to jump to appeal. You're the only high-profile, really statewide Democrat – been elected, in statewide office. There are a couple of Ohio Supreme Court justices who are Democrats. One of the reasons why you have been able to do that and be successful election after election is you've been able to go out into the rural areas and the small towns and the Youngstowns, and you are speaking about jobs, economy, things that resonate with those folks. You've had your Dignity of Work tour, and why doesn't the rest of the party do that?
I think they're starting to more. When people ask me about the presidential candidates, I talk to a number of them often, and I say to them, when the industrial Midwest, you need to talk about, and I'm willing to back up, understanding in smaller towns, people might not agree with Democrats on gun safety, or they might not agree with Democrats on gay rights.
Mm-hmm.
But and I understand that when I'm in smaller towns and smaller cities, that probably means certain percentage of voters will never vote for me because I'm pro-choice and I've been pro-marriage equality for 20 years, and I get a lifetime F from the NRA. But I also know that if you talk to people about their lives, and it's not just talking about jobs, it's about the dignity of work. It's about respecting and honoring work, whether you punch a clock or swipe a badge or work for tips or you're raising kids or yep. taking care of aging parents. But it's also – it's just the tone and the respecting work. But it's also talk to them about their lives. Talk to them about I want to be able to send my kid – to Shawnee State. I want to be able to I want to have health care. I want protections because I have arthritis or I have diabetes or I have asthma and I don't want to get cut off by my insurance company. If Democrats raise the volume on those issues, because Republicans are in the tank always. These Republicans are in the tank with Wall Street and drug companies. And sure, I mean, the White House looks like a retreat for Wall Street executives half the time, except on the days it looks like a retreat for the gun lobby. Mm-hmm. So if Democrats would talk about those issues that affect their lives, and that's health care and education and in workplace safety, I mean, coming and talking to them literally and figuratively about their jobs, about their work sites, about their workplaces, you then instead of getting 40% in some smaller towns, you might get 46%. You still have to win the elections by running up the numbers in Hamilton County and Montgomery County and Franklin
right.
County. But just don't show up in Portsmouth and show up in Chillicothe and show up in Gallipolis.
Have you had every Democrat candidate call you kind of for guidance? That's a lot of calls.
Yeah, well,
by
no,
the way,
I mean, I talk to the ones I know. I know not all of them. I've talked to some of the ones that have talked to me are now out of the race, but some are in the race. But I mean, it's that. I mean, nobody has any top secrets about how to win campaigns, and everybody in this race has figured out how to win somewhere, and so everybody thinks they know how to do it, and most do. But I have conversations pretty often with some of them.
I'm still, and I commend you for what you've done in the small towns and the working class areas. When you look at the presidential field right now, I can't understand why they aren't generally, I'm generalizing, but why this field isn't doing that very thing. Like you said, like if you run the score up in the cities, but you close the gap in the suburbs and the rural areas, you're going to win.
Is it a personality
thing? Is it a belief thing? You said people don't, you think about my home county. We talked about this before we got on, is that it's rarely gone, or I don't think it's ever gone for you, but you close the gap and there's a respect for you there that there's not, that isn't there for other Democratic candidates. And it's because you are speaking real issues that really affect real people, and you're not out spouting, the Green New Deal or things like that that don't really relate to any American for the most part. And that's on the right or the left.
Yeah. I think there's a couple things. One is part of it is just simply listening, and it's hard to listen as a presidential candidate, and how do you do that? But one of the things I've done that doesn't get a lot of attention, I'm fine with that, is I don't do a lot of the big town hall meetings where 500 people accumulate or 500 people gather at the Xavier campus and they yell and scream at me or with me, or they like me or they don't like me. I don't think that's very productive. I will convene groups. Aaliyah or Mike in my office will convene groups in Dayton and Cincinnati or in Middletown or Hamilton or Pickwick or wherever, and just listen to 15 veterans tell me what we need to do. Yep. Or 15 people, 15 farmers or 20 people, a cross section of the people in Xenia. And that's where you really learn ideas. So that's part of it. But I think in the presidential there, they are so busy distinguishing themselves one from another that they've sort of lost their way in this way. And I've had this conversation with a number of them recently when healthcare comes up. Now you've got every Democrat on this stage saying we want to get to universal coverage. Some all with different paths and different speeds. And that's what they have in common. Trump, on the other hand, wants to take their health insurance away. I mean, John Kasich and I together implementing the Affordable Care Act, 900,000 Ohioans have insurance because of that. Trump tried in the Senate and the House to take it away. He lost by one vote when McCain voted no. He's now trying to do it through the court system. So instead of Democrats sort of shouting each other that, here, I want to do Medicare for all. Well, I want to do this. And just instead of saying, we all agree on universal coverage, we have different ways of getting there. Contrast that with this president who's betraying working class families in the middle class because he wants to take this insurance away. He wants to take away consumer protections for pre-existing condition. Right now, 2 million Ohioans have a pre-existing condition. Chances are that two of the three of us sitting around this table have a pre-existing condition.
I have asthma. Thank you, Cincinnati Air.
Okay. And partly, most Americans over the age of about 40 have a pre-existing condition. We want to strengthen those consumer protections so they can't take your insurance away. Trump wants to just do the bidding of the insurance company and strip all the protections away. I mean, those are the things we should be talking about, because then whether you live in Gallipolis or you grew up in Boardman or you grew up in Mansfield, you're going to hear, my wife had asthma as a kid because her dad carried a union card. She survived. She was 16. She had a terrible attack, spent time in the Cleveland Clinic. I mean, people hear that if they have a pre-existing condition or they're afraid of their kid not being able to afford community college, whatever it is, and then they think, that Democrat makes sense. I just want them to get to that.
I think that would be great. You could say that from the debate stage, and people that would really resonate, because you understand people and you mm-hmm. understand the issue. Yeah. And I think that's a big breakdown right now in the current debate stage. I know you said on Meet the Press a few days ago you said it's a good field. Quote. You get asked a lot. Your name still comes up. In my little small world, I still mention you, as I still think you would be the best presidential candidate for the Democrats. Do you still, when people say that to you,
I guess I'm flattered. I just say no.
You have to have the fire. Yeah, in the belly, right?
That's exactly right. I think one of the reasons I went statewide is that people know I feel privileged to get to do this, and they know I take some joy in it. I the worst kind of candidate is sort of Eeyore, like, woe is me, this is really hard. Well, don't do it if it's that hard. And
right.
I can do that in a Senate race. I can do that my whole career. I just don't feel like I have that. I just don't really want to be president enough to go out and do that. There's it's a wonderful line a senator like 70, 80 years ago once said that he looked around the Senate and he saw this ambition. He said the only cure in the U.S. Senate for the presidential virus is embalming fluid. And yeah. I don't want to be that guy, you know.
Is it hard to say no, though? I mean, there was a New York Times story like a month ago that said, you know, high-level Democrats got in a room and they were like, okay, who else do we have? Your name was among them. You know, your wife, Connie, was actually quoted in the story and Michelle Obama's name was mentioned. I mean, how hard is it to keep saying no when people keep circling back asking?
It's harder to say yes and doing it. I don't know. I mean, I think it's sort of genetic among Democrats to complain about the field. These candidates aren't very good, and we all do that. So someone will come through this, and by March or April, we'll see the strongest candidate emerge. I don't know who it is. I don't even know who I'd vote for.
Are you concerned that we don't already know who the strongest candidate is?
No, because, look, and Republicans had 16, 17 in their primaries, and they ended up with one. I mean, I can't believe who it was, but they did. This early in the field, most voters don't – I mean, you're paying attention because it's your job to know politics and you guys like this stuff. And I pay attention. Most voters kind of sort of hear it. But when the time comes, there will be a Democratic candidate, and that candidate needs to not just run with what she's going to do or what he's going to do, but always to make this contrast that the Democratic Party is the party of workers, fights for workers, and Donald Trump has betrayed workers. He's betrayed workers in the Midwest just like he's betrayed our allies in the Mideast. I mean, we have to make those contrasts because in the end, it's always about contrasts.
The issue of civility, obviously the post-Trump world we live in, it's insane. But you've been able to – you've not gotten down into that. You've stayed true to who you are, and you've remained popular. You also
– popular is a relative term here. I don't win by a landslide, but go ahead. I'll take it.
Let's just say a Democrat winning statewide in Ohio, I think in this day or in this current state or climate is very impressive. You and Senator Portman have a strong working relationship. Is it ever tempting to get to just say to heck with it? I'm going to get down in the Twitter wars start shouting at people.
Yeah, there are moments. I mean, it's
there's a difference between criticism and civility, really.
Yeah, I mean, and you just I've been doing it long enough. I just realized that. If I'm going to get anything done, you work with people. I like Rob personally, and we don't agree on the big things, but we agree on a lot of the little things. I mean, we're working on the NIOSH project in Cincinnati right now. We work on all kinds of Lake Erie issues, on algae blooms and the pollution of the shallowest of the Great Lakes. We find common ground, a lot of things we do on opioids. So it's not fair to the voters, the people that represent me, for me to fight. I mean, certainly to fight for the right principles and values on the big questions. And Rob and I have huge disagreements on tax policy. I mean, he very much, and will always, and that's all right. But I just learned there's a guy. I'll give you the best example. There's a senator from Missouri named Roy Blunt. He's been at it a long time. He and I were secretaries of state of Missouri, I of Ohio at the same time in the 80s. And he was talking to somebody, and his politics and mine are very different. And he said, somebody one day, he said, Sherrod Brown and I have known each other for 30 years, and we've agreed a total of 5 times. And then he kind of laughed and he says, but all 5 of those are federal law. So the issue is, I find the senator just a few miles from here that represents Indiana, Todd Young. He's done a lot of stuff on international health, and so have I, and we're finding ways to work together on that and maybe on housing. So there's some senators. I mean, I've never worked with Ted Cruz on anything. I want to work with Mitch McConnell on the Brent Spence Bridge. He's got to step up more than he has on infrastructure funding and all that. But it's my job to find – I mean, my job literally with my staff is to find out – where we have what we have in common with which senators. Right now, I'm sorry. One more thing. I'm working on this African American cemetery in Price Hill.
Yeah, we want to get
and,
that.
Yeah, we were there today. Right after the the meeting on NIOSH, was there with the mayor and with Commissioner Driehaus, who's done extraordinary work on this. I know she's been on your show. And Senator Alexander from Tennessee is my co-sponsor in this. He's a senior member. He's retiring. He's chairman of the Health Education Labor Pension Committee. And we're working on this broad national network of these cemeteries, which were Union, African-American Union soldiers. I mean, to talk about segregation, we're in segregated cemeteries of all things, not surprisingly. But in that cemetery is a gentleman named Powhatan Beatty, who was a former slave, Union soldier, and Medal of Honor winner. And so it's a pretty impressive place, and we are coming together. Communities do a lot of volunteers have been in there, and just a little bit of money, and we're going to do some good things there.
And so you're creating a national registry?
Yeah, national registry, because these cemeteries are – people in Cincinnati didn't know this. People that lived in the neighborhood. Yeah. I mean, the mayor said, very honestly, he said, I've not known about this before, and I didn't grow up that far from here.
Well, I said that this morning when we were talking about who would cover this. I was like, how do I not know this?
Yeah, well, you're from Youngstown.
I've been here a long time though. I should have known that.
And we heard about it. Ali and my office heard about it on the radio, and there was a woman named Angelita Jones, a member of this church, and she and Reverend Yates were trying to get attention to it. And then we went out there in August. Denise Driehaus called the Veterans Service Organization, Veterans Service Commission. Every county in Ohio has a Veterans Service Commission. Not every state has that. We're lucky that way. And they had some money that they could put into this, and with a lot of volunteer hours, and Mayor Cranley is coming to council this week for some help from council in this. And they got $10,000 from the Veterans Service Commission. He's going to ask for $5,000 from council, and we're going to do this national registry of mostly forgotten cemeteries where African American soldiers were buried.
So going back to the Twitter wars, I mean, I was going to point out you were at the receiving end of one of the president. So after the mass shooting in Dayton, you know, Jason and I were both at a press conference. I walked away from the press with yourself and Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley, kind of after he came to visit the City Hall on the steps there.
Right.
Yeah, so he came to visit and he, you know, spoke to some of the victims at the hospital, and that was the point of the visit. Jason and I, we were there for Air Force One to land, and then we went to the press conference. I walked away from that press conference not feeling like yourself and Nan really criticized the president, but he felt otherwise. And like after that, there was a big Twitter. Yeah. Fuhrer.
What the hell happened? I remember hearing you even complimented him by saying he was very presidential. He was comforting to the victims. And I just remember, and I shame on me, I was just dumbfounded by the whole thing because I'm like, you were actually complimentary of the president.
I said that I appreciated the First Lady and the president visiting Miami Valley. And the only thing I said other than that was he looked us in the eye and said he was going to we asked him to, and he said he would move on universal background checks, has 85% support in the public. And then I also brought in later the assault weapon ban. I'm not sure I said that to him then. You know, then he went back and decided. I mean, it's to him, it's all about divisiveness and calling people's names. I mean, I don't know, and I'm not sure I know any adult human being in business, in government, in social services, anybody that thinks they have to attack and divide as much as he does. I mean, there was just no reason. I don't take it personally. I don't much like him. He probably doesn't much like me, but that's really beside the point. But that he attacked Nan and me there was pretty extraordinary. And, the bad news, that matters little. What matters is that he promised us and a number of the victims that he would do something, and then the next week he sat down with the leader of the NRA. And you know, what's curious about this is most gun owners and many NRA members think we need common sense gun law. Things like background checks and assault weapons are for military, not for street fighting. Yet the NRA, the policy is driven by the gun manufacturers and a few of the very, very, very well-paid officials at the NRA. It's not driven by the NRA membership. It's not driven by hunters. They know that people shouldn't have us. They don't go hunting with assault weapons. Hunters don't. They don't. They're okay with universal background checks because they got nothing to hide. They understand we should change the loophole. In fact, if you go out to Lunkin or you go to Cincinnati Airport in Kentucky, in northern Kentucky, and you have if you are on the terrorist watch list, you can't get on a plane, but you can still buy an assault weapon. I mean, those things we ought to change. And 89% of the public think so, but the president is so tied in with the gun lobby, got more money from them than anybody, and he takes it all. He gets angry if you even talk about this, and that's apparently what happened.
So we definitely, we do need to, because, so I'm sorry, we jumped around. I feel like this is my fault because we went back to Twitter. But, you know, other reasons why you're here, and this isn't necessarily one of them, but, you know, we had James Pilcher on the show last week to talk about what was going on with Ryan Holmes. And, you know, I've heard so many people talk about that story. Yeah. Like, people live in Ryan Holmes, and people were like, I've heard a lot of stories this week. And you must have, you read that story, and you're taking some action there.
Yeah. You know, it's, when you step back, there's, other than the birth of a child, there's nothing more important than the purchase of a home or the rental of a home. I mean, it's everything. There's a book, one of the best books I've ever read is a book called Evicted. A guy by the name of Matthew Desmond spent several months in a white trailer park on the edge of Milwaukee, a city a lot like Cincinnati, and then in the inner city lived. And he saw what happened when people are evicted. 40% of the people in this country who rent, I think it's a little less, 35%, I think, people who rent spend more than half their income in their rent. So one thing goes wrong in their lives turn upside down. Ryan Holmes, purchasing a Ryan home is not quite the same, but you buy this house, you spend a lot of money, nothing's cheap, especially housing, and then you find out that this workmanship was shoddy or something didn't happen, and then you ought to just be able to go to the builder, go to Ryan Holmes, say this didn't happen, this was your mistake, could you fix it? And now they use something called forced arbitration, and they force you what started off as a really happy time. You know, I got a new family, I'm moving into a home in Blue Ash, or I'm moving into a home in Anderson Township, and then I'm fighting with the person. I got to go to court.
None of these people, they terrible. Feel so alone.
Yeah, and then they
like
got
that
nobody.
That really
yeah.
resonated with the stories that kind of
yeah,
came
Pilcher
out.
Yeah,
Pilcher
did a really
today.
Good job. I mean, I follow the careers of the two of you, and I look at somebody like James Pilcher. And I mean, my wife's a journalist, as I think you both know. And,
yes.
And so, I mean, to me,
the, reading the plain dealer.
To me, journalism, I mean, it really is, in spite of the president calling enemies of the people, which is just crap. But journalism is so important because you really do. You end up, you know, you write a story like that, it puts some pressure on Ryan Holmes. It got me more involved. I didn't know enough about it until he called our office. And we weigh in and we can put some pressure on.
You're looking at consumer protection.
Yeah,
you're looking at it from that angle and the idea.
And reporters, I mean, you don't get anything out of this except the satisfaction of shining a light on some. I mean, there's a term and some use in reporting, you know, to comfort the afflicted and the afflict the comfortable. And when Ryan Holmes does this, they deserve the spotlight shining on them. The people that bought those homes and they were wronged by Ryan Holmes and then had to fight and to go to court and do all that stuff, they so appreciate your shining a light on this. So maybe people like me and Senator Blumenthal, who was helping on this, can get some action from them. Exactly right. Thank you for bringing that up.
I got a couple of fun questions.
Sure.
Let's take the edge off here a little bit. A couple just pop.
Something about the Bengals?
Oh. Yeah, I don't know about that.
Bengals are where the Browns were 2 years ago, so you never know, right?
I know. You know, we have a bunch of Browns fans in the room, and they were kind of lamenting over their Sunday game. I'm like, I had a city full of people here would be thrilled to be you two right now.
Yeah, win once in a while, right?
I just jotted down a few things I just wanted to ask you, because you're a fun guy, and what – career would you be doing if you weren't doing this?
Well, the career I wanted to do was play center field for the Indians, but that didn't happen. I just remember thinking about when I realized that would never happen. I played high school baseball, but I remember going to an Indians game when I was a teenager, and I remember moving down between games back when they played doubleheaders, and I remember watching these guys play catch on the sidelines. And I mean, my high school baseball team was pretty good. We had one really good player, but I never saw anybody play catch like that. I mean, these guys are just so much better than I realized. I ought to look for something else. I don't know. I teach maybe. I have a teaching degree. I like teaching. I could see if having done that.
Did you ever throw out the first pitch?
I've thrown that I did, and
how did it go? That's always a good question for the politicians.
I appreciate it. I didn't do Mayor Mallory for sure.
I
was at that game, and
was that the World Series?
We were all thinking.
They don't like guys like me. The World Series they have like Jay-Z or somebody or LeBron James. I was at the game with Mallory's, but I thought it was so great how Mark took that and made fun of himself and made it. I mean, it really showed guts. But no, the only time I've thrown out a Reds game, Castellani, whose politics are about the exact opposite of mine, is a really nice man and he's very kind. He's a kind man. And he took me before throwing out the first pitch, he took me down in the batting cage and played catch with me. Because, you know, it's a lot harder than it looks. I don't do this stand in front of the rubber. I stood on the rubber. I'm left-handed. I threw it close enough to a strike. I don't know if it was a strike, but it was the catcher didn't have to block it or dive for it or, you know, it was to the plate. And I threw it from the mound, from the rubber, and I was proud of that. But
it was so
nothing
relieved.
Great. No, you do feel
so relieved.
Yeah, you know, nobody really cared. Now, but the other side of that, the worst I ever saw, I was in New York for opening day once. And this was Ted Kennedy's son had cancer and had his leg amputated. He was 15 years old. He comes out to the mound on crutches. Apparently a first public appearance after he had cancer surgery. And it was New York and the fans booed him because he was a politician's kid. He was 15 years old and had one leg and the fans booed him. So what are you going to do? So throwing out the first pitch is not a career builder. I'll just leave it at that.
What app on your phone can you not live without?
MLB, just checking major baseball scores.
You really are a big
– My email address is damn Yankees. I hate the Yankees so much. I never saw the Yankees play, even though my dad – we lived 2 hours from the stadium in northern Ohio. I never saw the Yankees play when I was a kid because my dad didn't want to give 15 cents of his ticket to Mickey Mantle. So I hate him. And I used to I shouldn't say this in public, but during the All-Star game, because there was always a lot of Yankees, I would root for Yankee injuries during the All-Star game. Not life-threatening, only put them out of action for the end of the year.
This past summer?
No, not anymore. I don't do that anymore. No, I grew out of that. Sort of. And I got to go to Crosley Field when I was a kid because my neighbor grew up in Kentucky, and I got to go to Old Crosley when I was about 10 years old, and I saw Pete Rose and Tommy Harper and Veda Pinson and Frank Robinson and Johnny O'Toole and Johnny Temple and all these Gordy Coleman and all these old Reds players. Pretty cool. And Veda Pinson hit a triple down the right field line. And anybody that saw Crosley Field knows what that means.
Speaking of Cincinnati, what's your favorite Cincinnati restaurant?
Gosh, I don't even know. I don't have a good answer for that.
Skyline
Chili.
Do you like Cincinnati style chili?
Yeah, I do like Cincinnati chili.
It took me a long time to get on board with
it. I don't want Grater's ice cream.
That's not what Chili's like in Youngstown.
Well, I know. It's very different. So I don't eat it a lot. I just kind of work and I do what I do. But I like Skyline Chili and I like Grater's ice cream. Like, who could not, right?
You're allowed to go to one more concert in your entire life. What would it be? It could be a band that's not here anymore. It could be whoever. Who would you go see?
This weekend, I, for some reason, listened to some Chicago, and I saw them play once. I'd like to see them again because they were just great musicians.
You know, I'm getting to the point where it's
Peter
like
Cetera.
You do want to go see people that maybe you haven't
seen.
Well,
you wonder if they're still living.
I know, because Cher is coming here, and I was like, I've never seen her, so it was like.
And my wife's seen Bruce Springsteen like 20 times. And it is an Ohio thing. But my wife, back in during the Obama presidential race in 2008, Bruce Springsteen came to Cleveland for the Sunday night before the rally at the end. And my wife loves Bruce Springsteen. I like him. She just loves him. And he comes off the stage. Obama hadn't arrived yet. And I'm standing there and he comes down and I said, I think I call him Mr. Springsteen because my name's Sherrod Brown. I represent Ohio in the Senate. This is my wife, Connie. And you know what he said? He said, Connie, I love your writing. Wow. And my wife writes about the kinds of people that he sings about. And it was like she has traded on that the rest of her life. How cool is that?
Yeah.
She is a fierce defender of the First Amendment too. And I love that about her. I do have one thing to take up with you before we go. I was disappointed you didn't wear like an Indians hoodie today. Because my favorite shared photos, you were at some speech rally.
Oh, yeah. So during the World Series, it was during the World Series, and I won. I spent more money than I ever thought I'd spend on baseball because they ain't cheap. We had, with a game seven, I bought tickets, my kids and my wife, and they were $250, and we sat way out in right field, but it was, we were there. And I the whole week I wore the Indian stuff. And
is that where that photo came from?
Yeah, like, I think so. Okay. Yeah, because I mean, I wore it in speeches. I didn't care where I was. I was going to wear an Indian sweatshirt. I didn't want, I don't think I washed it. It didn't matter, man. It was the World Series. You've had more World Series in Cincinnati success wins than we've had in Cleveland.
Actually, I do. One more thing. Matt's over there telling me to get going.
Jason just, and I never listen to that when Phil does it to us.
You've just added a new member to the family.
We just got a second rescue dog. He's a year old. We named him Walter after Walter Reuther, the UAW leader. It's a little nerdy, but and there's this.
I was wondering why they.
That's why his name Walter. Okay. And this dog, I never thought I'd get a little lap dog. He weighed 8 pounds. He was a pound underweight. Somebody found him on the street, and he has made our 8-year-old dog Franklin, named after Franklin Roosevelt. Rounding out the nerdiness, he's made Franklin younger because this little dog keeps Franklin. Franklin's annoyed.
So sweet.
In the morning, Franklin goes off by himself. He doesn't really want to see Walter, but it's been fun having both these dogs.
I love Connie's tweets about the dogs. Yeah. Franklin was he was on stage with you last year.
Franklin was on stage in the 2012 race. He wasn't really all that thrilled.
But no, he wasn't.
He doesn't understand his fame. He just doesn't.
You know what's about getting a new dog? That's a very presidential thing to do. I'm just saying. Well,
not a rescue, not a scrawny little 8-pound rescue. That's not very presidential. It's got to be a really big, cool, pure breed, right?
Senator Brown, this is great. Thanks so much, Jason.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thank
good to
you.
See you. It was fun.
Thanks again to Senator Sherry Brown. Sherry, that was fun. I always enjoy talking. I have great respect for Senator Brown. I always have had respect for him. I tell you, and I've said this before, but I think Ohio has it really good. When you look at, we have a very solid Republican senator, a very solid Democratic senator, and the fact that these two guys have respect for each other and they try to find common ground and work together. I can't imagine there's too many other states where you have one of each party representative where that's happening.
Well, I know. And honestly, I mean, in such a long time relationship, too, like that would – it would be hard, I think, if it was acrimonious.
You know, the one question I didn't get to ask him as we were talking about civility is whether he's getting a lot of pushback to be more critical of Senator Portman as Senator Portman – continues to sort of line up behind, alongside Donald Trump.
Too much criticism.
So, yeah, that was one thing I wanted to ask him, but I'm sure we could get on a conference call and ask him about that at some point if we need to. Anyway, let's shift gears.
You know what? Let me ask you one quick question. What app can't you live without? I thought that was a good question when you asked that.
Well, I was asked this question. I guest hosted last week with Rocky and Eddie on the Rocky and Eddie show with Rocky Boyman.
Well, you did a very good job.
Thank you.
I tuned in to listen. I couldn't make fun of you, though, like when we sit next to each other.
I know. Thank you so much. all the practice in the world here in
yes.
the booth. The question was posed to me. I actually got the idea from there. And I said, because the rule was we can't use social media. If the rule was to be social media, I would say Twitter, hands down, no doubt. Most of my phone time, if it's not on email or text, is on Twitter. So because I couldn't do Twitter, the other app that I probably look at the most beyond that is Cincinnati.com apps.
Me too. Like for screen time is because I need to know what's going on. I look at all of the news, though, and I get all the text alerts. Like, so I have, like, all of them kind of clustered in one – all the news sites clustered in one spot to kind of see what other people are working on, especially when you cover City Hall. People can take stories in, like, a million different directions, and at any one time there's a million different stories, and to see kind of what people picked out to write about.
Should that segue me into a shameless plug for buying a Cincinnati.com subscription?
I think that it should. You know what? Honestly – I think, you know, Burl has written a little bit about this. You know, we are putting some stuff behind these subscriber paywalls. And you know, I think that people get frustrated if they hit the wall, but it is not expensive. It's $5 right now for 3 months. We appreciate when people do this. You know, I met somebody in Carew Tower. There was a boutique opening And I met a woman there, and she said to me that she's been subscribing for 25 years and her mother's been subscribing for 50. And it was like, you know what? I love to hear that. And so,
and if you have a print, by the way, if you have any print subscription, you automatically also have as part of your package a digital subscription, all access digital subscription. It's the world we live in now. I love it. I think it's about time. And I'm telling you, I am just completely overwhelmed by the response by people who are willing to buy subscriptions. So thank you. If those of you who are out there listening have bought a digital subscription during this period as we've transitioned, thank you so much. If you haven't, lots of deals always running on that. I think we'll see more and more of our premium content, the stuff Sherry does, the in-depth stuff. She had a big in-depth profile on Yvette Simpson, former Cincinnati City Councilwoman, last week. That was subscription only. All my columns have been going behind there. Paul Dougherty's. I think you'll see more of our investigative pieces. I know we had James Pilcher on last week. And I'll tell you, that's one where I thought where the response to that and the amount of people who read that and it being behind subscription only really is encouraging. And so thank you. Ultimately, what I'm saying this is to say thank you for those of you who are engaged in our content and willing to pay for it. So thank you so much.
All right. So now we've reached what I'm going to refer to as the singing portion.
Wait, I thought we were done with the... No. I thought, would this subscription thing mean that we're done with the episode?
No. I saw something, speaking of social media.
Phil, I thought you were the one that called the shots on this thing.
I got this.
Silent Phil.
I feel I got this. I spotted on Facebook, Halloween is over, but I would like to know why you were dressed up as one of the members of the band Poison. Do tell, and I'm going to need you to sing, please.
So our friend...
It's so glorious, I can't even tell you guys. I almost died when I was scrolling.
My friend Sarah Minard was having her 40th birthday party. Her and her husband and their daughter live in College Hill. And so she wanted to have an 80s birthday party because she was born in the 80s and did most of her growing up. And actually, I think it was an 80s and 90s. So there were some people who came in 90s stuff. Like
different looks for sure.
Yeah. But my wife Bethany.
Oh, you did it right though.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember we were at Vera Cruz back a couple months ago and we were having dinner there up in, what is that, East Price Hill?
Mm-hmm.
And...
Ooh, yum,
we started talking about this party, and somehow, I don't remember, we were like, we got to go as a four-member 80s band, and we didn't want to do Motley Crue because the Motley Crue was, they're kind of popular again right now because of that Netflix biopic. And so, I don't remember who said Poison. Maybe I did, since I'm the true child of the 80s in that group.
Yeah, the music aficionado.
The 80s aficionado. So our friend Sandra George, Matt George, Bethany, myself, we decided to do Poison. We Googled Poison, like a photo, and so we all saved that on our phone, and Bethany went out and spent weeks going back and forth to thrift stores getting all kinds of fun stuff, leather jackets and leather vests and... stone washed, acid washed jean, whatever they called them.
Is this going to be your new look? Or are we going to stick to the zippies and
no quarter zips, pullovers?
I don't know. I really liked it.
Yeah,
it's fun to do that, isn't it?
So that's what we did.
Did you
sing?
To this
party. We did sing.
Mm-hmm. You're going to sing for me now.
Every rose has its thorn.
Oh, that takes me back.
Takes me back.
It's like dances.
Seventh grade dance.
Yeah.
It was probably more like, what, 9th, 10th grade for you?
Yes, thank you.
I'm sorry. Any other questions about this? But we did, we sang, we had Guitar Hero.
Can you shoot out a picture on Twitter for people?
No.
Come on.
No, I can't. I even made Bethany not tag me.
Aren't you guys? I'll talk to Bethany. Let me see what I can do about this.
I had fake tattoos drawn on my arm.
Oh, my God. I love that you were game to do that and like went all in, because I'm a big person about dressing up. This is the first Halloween I haven't dressed up, which we're calling it. I'm officially an adult, apparently.
That's quite odd because I'm the opposite. I hate dressing up. I hate knowing. But for some reason, I was just totally cool with this. Thought it was something fun. Sarah's great. We love her. And so we're like, they loved it. The Georges and Bethany, they all love that stuff. But me, I'm a homebody. I like to stay home, watch college football, and do nothing.
That's not true.
Anyway, are we done?
Yeah, we're good.
Are you
done?
No more surprises?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't going to let that go by.
Phil, do I need to take us out of this episode singing singing something? Unskinny. Bop, 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 bop. Oh, boy. Anyway, bye.